Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez from Good to Be Social. And today we're going to talk about legal trends that will impact DE&I in law firms and law departments. Our guest today is Lloyd Johnson. Lloyd is the visionary CEO and founder of Chief Legal Executive LLC. He is also the founder of the Black General Counsel Roundtable, as well as he created the Women in Law Departments and the groundbreaking Women Influence and Power and the Law Annual Conference. Prior to that, Lloyd launched the Minority Corporate Counsel Association, and he served as its executive director from 1997 to 2000, and the chair of the board of directors until 2005. Earlier in his career, Lloyd was a practicing attorney working in both the public and private sector. Lloyd went to the University of California Hastings College of Law, and he got his BS in business administration from the University of Southern California. Welcome to the show, Lloyd.
Guy, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, Lloyd, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've been involved in DE&I pretty much since the outset of your career. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the DE&I space. Where do you see the challenges that remain? Are they the same as when you started? And what are some of the trends that will impact diversity initiatives in law firms?
Guy, great question. First, interestingly enough, that if I or anybody else were to start MCCA in 2022, it would be much more difficult than it was in 1997. And I think that's a good thing in a way. And that's just because there are so many different initiatives in the DE&I space. That's one of the obvious factors. Another obvious factor, and it's talked about a lot, in the words frustration, resentment, and diversity fatigue would be very significant headwinds that would make it really, really hard. And as it relates to those three words, I think you'll hear those whether you're talking with people in law firms or law departments. And underlying all of that is that there's been an extraordinary amount of money and resources that's been directed, and the needle hasn't moved as much as it should have given the time and energy and resources.
So when you say frustration, resentment, and diversity fatigue, what do you mean by that?
So I did a call with about 70 law firms last week, and one of the law firm diversity and business development coordinators talked about the fact that even though we were only 25 or 26 days into 2022, she had already received 26 different surveys from law departments requesting information. So there's fatigue in that the amount of data that's being requested is overwhelming. In addition to that, in many instances, law departments will request information and they never hear about it and are under the impression that it's not necessarily being looked at. And then also in terms of law firms, one of the first calls to action was in 1997. At that point, I went around and the country and was able to get 60 or 70 GCs to make commitments about sending work to outside counsel. And that was the first. I think there have been three or four, and that the rhetoric of what has been discussed does not match the reality. So you have hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent over the last three decades, an extraordinary amount of unbillable hours, and that has not translated into making significant change as most would measure individual change. And so that's on the law firm side.
Yeah.
And then as far as the law departments are concerned, that there are many partners in law firms who want to control or manage the accounts and the relationships, and they are not as egalitarian or fair as they probably could be or should be as it relates to, one, sharing origination credit with partners of color. Two, in many instances, you'll have a law firm that will have at people of color at a beauty contest to get the work, and then those people of color won't get to do the work. And then third and finally, it's the experience of many associates of color that they are directed into some of the areas that do not lead to having as much opportunity to develop their skills as possible. So bottom line is there's a little bit of frustration shared by almost all of the stakeholders in the DE&I ecosystem.
Interesting. And what do you think this increased scrutiny means in practice for law firms specifically?
Great question, Guy. And as a backdrop to that, and to build on a question that you asked before that I don't think that I dealt with directly, if we could look at what I think is going to happen over the course of the next 2 to 3 years as it relates to critical trends. First, I'll list them and then talk about each one. For the first time ever, there will be accountability for general counsel in terms of what they say that they're doing. Second, diversity analytics, especially as it relates to work that is done in law firms. And then third, I think we're going to see a flight to firms that have substantial bench strength in terms of partners of color.
Got it.
So item number one, next month at Legal Week, there will be a panel that I was fortunate to be invited to with Patrick Fuller from ALM, as well as Heather Nevitt. And there we will reveal the results of the first ever survey of racial diversity in law departments. And there was part of that survey that also gets to what law departments are doing with respect to the utilization of outside counsel. So for, you know, finally, you know, generally the discussion is always, well, what are law firms doing? What are law firms doing? But nobody has pointed the spotlight of scrutiny to law departments. So now that's changing. Trend number two, diversity analytics. There are now, you know, a growing body of data that will allow law departments to, without a great deal of expenditure of time of FTEs or people within the law department, to be able to look at the work that is being done by their firms down to the matter level based on race and gender. And that we feel, and we're seeing a little bit of it already, is going to drive a very different discussion. And then finally, in terms of the trend number three, flight to firms that have substantial bench strength, that as more and more information is readily available about where the partners of color are and what they are doing, it's going to be harder and harder for law firms that have a very small number of partners of color to keep them there. Because if it, in the stock market, there's always ultimately going to be a flight to quality. And in this instance, in this job market, I don't see why it's going to be an exception.
Very interesting. And do you think many law firms are still too focused on easy wins and performative diversity?
The short answer is yes.
And what do you think the dangers of doing that is?
Think about a short-term focus for a publicly traded company. A company can be so focused on meeting its numbers for the next quarter that it loses sight of what it is. And you know, there's been a lot of discussion about what happened with Exxon last year, and that every year they were so focused on meeting their short-term numbers, they failed to invest in things like renewable energy. So all of a sudden you have a systemic change, and they, one, don't have the ability to move quickly enough. And in addition to that, they've lost credibility. So to the extent that law firms have been managing to get things that are more about optics than substance, as it relates to being able to go back to those clients and say, oh, well, we're working really, really hard. We had six partners of color and they've all left. We'll get some more. You don't really have the credibility generally to have people stick with you while you make those transitions.
Makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned diversity analytics, and you know, in my experience, law departments often ask law firms for their diversity information, their data, right? They're looking for, you know, at attrition, compensation. What are your thoughts for best practices on asking for data, giving data, and using data?
That more general counsel are going to take a hard line view that if you don't give us the data, you're not going to get any new work. And they're now starting to go public with it. And we'll see. And it may take 3 years, although I think it could be two. And so that it's, I guess, in terms of attrition and, you know, other data related to how law firms manage their people, ultimately it's theirs. But what are the consequences of not sharing? And that's what I think is going to happen. And, you know, Guy, hopefully in my comments, you see a through line. And the through line is, this is not just a law firm problem. Yeah. It is not just a law department problem. So the challenge for general counsel is they have to be more courageous. And if they say, we are going to do X, if you don't comply, then they need to do that. Some have said that general counsel are saying things, and even though they mean them, not necessarily following through. So there's room for opportunity for all people, and that includes the general counsel and includes the people one level below the general counsel. And in that vein, on the law firm side, it includes people who run the firms, people who are practice group heads, as well as all of the partners. So after all is said and done, from where I sit, the next 2 to 3 years will be more impactful on what diversity looks like the next 5 to 10 years than anything that we've seen since the 1980s.
Well, it's definitely a lot of change. So, Lloyd, as we discussed prior to starting the podcast, a lot of our listeners are either marketing and business development professionals at law firms or lawyers. What would you say to either of them if they work at a law firm that, you know, maybe needs to review their DE&I policies or the way they're marketing the firm from that perspective? You know, do you have any advice for them in order to, you know, as you said, make it more than just fluff, but really impress upon potential clients that they have really bought into the need for diversity and inclusion?
Great question. I guess my initial response is that law firm leadership needs to take a really close look to say, is there anything that we're doing that could be causing some of these challenges that we face? So if we're having higher turnover as it relates to, you know, a particular group of people, it's very easy to say, well, they went in-house or they went to another law firm. But to take a closer look and says, well, yeah, they did go to another law firm. So is there something different that we can be doing and should be doing? That's at the firm management level. In terms of for, you know, law firm DE&I professionals as well as marketing professionals, I think although the next 12 to 18 months are going to be more problematic and fraught with peril because they're going to get caught between the law departments and law firms as it relates to collecting the data and what the data means, that I can tell you if it's February 2022 right now, that by February of 2024, very few law firms will be complaining about survey fatigue because the surveys are going to go away and all of that is going to be replaced by the diversity analytics. And Guy, one of the factors that I didn't mention that's really going to drive all of this is, and you guys are good to be social or really, really smart, and you know trends probably better than I do. Over the course of the last 3 years, somewhere between 800 million and 1.1, 1.2 billion has been spent investing in legal tech firms. Yep. There's going to be more money and more focus on technology, and that's going to mean more efficiency on the law department side, and that is going to directly impact law firms.
Yeah. All right, last question for you, Lloyd, and then I'll let you go, so I know you're a busy guy. So I know you do a range of work in the leadership development field with programs such as Advance for Women, Rise Up for People of Color, as well as you yourself being a successful executive coach. What do you think is the relationship between the most successful leaders and their approach to DE&I?
It starts with the question, what can each individual be doing differently? And on top of that, you have an awareness that everybody has biases. We do. They're not bad, and they're only problematic when we act as if they don't exist. So a higher degree of awareness that we have biases and taking a hard look and saying, how do those biases show up? And then having the courage and commitment and being intentional about doing something to change first on an individual level, and then secondly, changing culture.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for being on the show today. I think it's a very interesting topic. And as you said, it's only going to grow in importance over the next couple of years.
That's right. Guy, thank you very much for the opportunity. You and the team at Good to Be Social are doing a great job. Happy to do whatever I can to help move the needle.
Thank you so much, Lloyd. It's great having you here. All right. And for our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, just go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there. You can also check out some of our past episodes. Thank you again, Lloyd. And thank you to our audience. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.